This is a business radio show where we talk about the craziness of small business. It's that craziness that actually makes it exciting, interesting, and totally unpredictable. This is Business Insanity Talk Radio with your host, Barry Maltz.
Thanks for joining this week's radio show. And remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, we are now at show number 428. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the answer to all your business communication solutions in the cloud. It's also provided by Alibaba and their groundbreaking conference for small business owners, Gateway 17, on June 21st to June 22nd in Detroit. And we're also sponsored by Bloom That, exactly what you ordered, delivered nationwide for Mother's Day. Well, first on today's show, with tax legislation pending before Congress, my first guest says that small business today are more likely to see the government as their enemy and larger businesses as their allies. But historically, it has been just the opposite. Benjamin Waterhouse is a historian of business, politics, and capitalism in the U.S. He's currently Associate Professor of History at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Barry. It's great to be here.
So why is there this historical shift? I mean, small businesses used to be allied with government. Now they're against government. Why all this stuff's going on?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And, you know, what I try to get at this in my own writing, a book I've written called The Land of Enterprise explains how the history of business is wrapped up in broader themes in American history. I think the thing that you got to remember to start with is that big business as we know it today hasn't always been with us. It really gets created at the end of the 19th century. Before that, pretty much every business is a small business.
Right.
Some are more successful than others. But what happens by the early part of the 20th century is that small companies felt really threatened by the growth of these massive corporations, whether it was in railroads or steel manufacturing, or particularly the thing that they felt ganged up on was in retail. The change happens over a longer period of time, and it really, I think, starts in the New Deal period, and it continues in the period after the Second World War, when the federal government starts to take a much stronger role in regulating the business community as a whole.
And so we really saw a lot, during the Great Recession in 2008, 2009, where the government really tried to, have all these regulations against large businesses and then really tried to help small business owners through the SBA. Are small business owners, do you think, frustrated because the SBA isn't doing enough to help them?
I think that's part of it. And the challenge that I think we see today is that policymakers and the public at large tend to see business as a kind of monolith, right, as just one entity that can either be helped or hurt by a certain policy. And historically, the reality is that there's an enormous difference between small businesses and large businesses, that big businesses are not simply small businesses that made good, right? They are structurally and fundamentally different entities, and their relationship with the government and with policy should be different.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, a lot of those small businesses, as you said, are never going to be big businesses. I mean, there's 27 million small businesses in the U.S., but only 5 million of them actually have employees. So most of them are very, very small. They're very, very small enterprises. And so they really do have to be treated differently. And they don't have the lobbyists like the large corporations really have. So they're really at a disadvantage, don't you think, Benjamin?
They are certainly at a disadvantage, and they always have been. You know, one of the stories that I tell in this new book that I've written about business, Land of Enterprise, is that big businesses, particularly in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, got themselves organized politically in a really pronounced way. And my conclusion or my kind of answer to your first question about how this shift happened is that as big businesses, as their lobbyists got more organized, they deliberately reached out to smaller companies and said, you need to be on our side. The government is your enemy. The government is the one imposing regulations and taxes and requirements like, employee-based health care or anything that makes life more difficult for a small firm. And largely the small firms, kind of went along with it and said, okay, if you are the ones who are doing the lobbying and you're getting all these sort of anti-regulatory or anti-tax measures passed, we'll go along with it. And they come to see the federal government as their enemy. That was the exact opposite of the way things had been in the 19-teens, 20s, and 30s, when small business was actually pushing for rules that leveled the playing field, that made it so that large corporations couldn't run them out of business.
It's very interesting. We're talking to Benjamin Waterhouse. He is the author of The Land of Enterprise, A Business History of the United States. So now the landscape changes. We have a president office who supposedly is the business president because theoretically that's his background. How do you think he's doing as far as promoting small business versus big business?
You know, I think obviously we're only 100 days in or so.
Is that all?
It's very
I hear
early.
We're only 6% of the way in. I just saw that number. It seems like forever.
Right. You know, my sense at the moment is that to the extent that Trump has a coherent economic position at all, it's really conforming to the standard Republican Party position, which is to say great things about small business, but really enact policies that fundamentally help economic elites, whether they're large corporations or small and individual firms that happen to have very wealthy people running them. And it's very much the same set of policies that have been in place or been pushed by that wing of the political spectrum from the last 35, 40 years.
Now, I'm not in the business of defending the president, but I was heartened to see that in his, suggestion of a, tax reform, he does include in the tax cut not only large corporations, but also LLCs. So if that ever in our wildest dreams would get implemented, it should help small businesses, wouldn't it?
I suspect it would, but you make a good point. In your wildest dreams, it's not likely to happen. The larger a company is, the better accountants they can afford to pay, and the more kind of complex the more complexities in the tax code it can take advantage of. The reason that, on the whole, very large companies that you hear about tend not to pay as high a percentage in their taxes as smaller firms or as maybe the numbers would say they should is just because they take advantage of their size. It's a manifestation of the same principle that allows a really large retailer to undercut small stores because they get a better deal because of the economy of scale that they bring. So in a way, that the tax policy operates on the same principle.
Now, one of the other places where I think a lot of small business owners thought that the government was overreaching was really on the Affordable Care Act, where it forced businesses with 50 people or more to provide health insurance for their employees. And now it looks like that's going to get rolled back. Do you think that will be a help for small businesses?
It may be. The problem really gets back to the long history of how we make policies for the good of the country in general that impact on businesses. And this is a place where I think we can see historically that the policies are made with big businesses in mind, not small businesses. The whole idea that health insurance should be linked to your employer comes out of a period in American history in the 1950s and 60s when many, many more people worked for much larger corporations. And those corporations had an incentive to buy into this system. They preferred that than to have, labor unions have a lot of say over health insurance. And they preferred to be able to keep employees working for them because their health insurance was tied to where they worked. The whole policy doesn't make sense from the perspective of a small business person. So, sure, getting rid of that requirement will help small businesses. It won't do any good for the ultimate goal of providing health
for people's health. Right, exactly. And that's why you might tar and feather me, but I think we got to get to a single-payer system. But the last question I wanted to ask you, Benjamin, was what can small business owners actually do, given the history of America, to really get their voice heard more and get the results they need out of the political system?
I don't think there's an easy answer to that. Historically, small business owners are pretty ineffective lobbyists on their own for the simple reason that most small business owners spend the vast majority of their
time
running
their
companies.
We're too busy running our businesses, right?
That's right. But there are trade associations and there are lobbying groups that serve to kind of speak on behalf of small businesses. I think what has happened, and this is the kind of historical argument I'd make, is that those institutions have basically fallen in lockstep with the interests of the really large companies. Mm-hmm. And even if they say they're defending the small businesses, they basically adopt the same kind of anti-regulatory, small government, get the government out of everything, and otherwise let business do its own thing mantra that you hear from the largest firms.
But capitalism and America have always been intertwined, right? So this is not going to change.
Well, capitalism has always been part of the American experience. They grew up together, but capitalism takes many forms. Yeah. Capitalism is not one thing that exists in a pure state. It's something that people have control over, and the type of ways that we can manage capitalism, that we can create a system that works for the people. For the greatest number of people, there's historic examples of doing that. It might infringe on the absolute right to do whatever you want whenever you want, but that's historically the way that smaller businesses and smaller economic interests have had it better.
Well, Benjamin, where can people get in touch with you and get a copy of the book? It's called The Land of Enterprise, A Business History of the United States.
Yes, The Land of Enterprise. It's available wherever books are sold. And I am a professor at the University of North Carolina, and my email is out there. I'd be happy to talk to anyone of your listeners who's interested in these issues.
Benjamin, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Coming up, I truly believe that entrepreneurship can save this economy. My next guest shares the belief, and he started a program 30 years ago to actually prove it. This is AM 560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the Alarm Detection Systems Traffic Center.
Good morning, I'm Jeremy Scott. Taking a look at your roadways. Pretty busy out there, to be honest with you, and it's all due to the wet weather. We'll start things off in northwest Indiana, where the two left lanes are blocked with the crash, 80-94 westbound of Broadway. We are seeing a heavy delay approaching the scene. Also, northbound the tri-state, 127th, the crash blocks the three right lanes, but volume there so light that it's not causing a problem. Inbound on the Stevenson, the car smacked the wall of the ramp to the inbound Dan Ryan. Expect that to be closed here shortly for removal of that car. Other than that, still seeing some wet roads out there. If you do encounter some standing water, definitely make sure to turn around and don't drown. All the other roads are delay and incident free. Forecast of rain moves back in later on this morning with temperatures ranging from the 50s to the 70s. Right now at O'Hare, it's 42 degrees. Next update's in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
There's been a lot of talk recently about fake news, and it's gotten a lot harder to know who in the media you can trust. Too often, reading just the headlines can be misleading. You need to turn to a place that you can trust, a place that gives you more than just the headlines and more than just the mainstream media spin. What you need are answers. That's why we're here. Get the latest news. Find out what it means and why it's important to you. Real news, real answers. Join us on AM 560, The Answer.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe new life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in and existing customers fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun, and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out BarryMaltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his 6-part video series.
Here's microbiologist Dr. Kim O'Neill talking about Balance of Nature.
Scientific research has shown that many cancers and lifestyle diseases can be prevented with a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. This prevention comes from the phytochemicals in the plants. They fight against oxidants that damage the cell's DNA, causing mutations that lead to disease. I don't take any supplementation, but I take Balance of Nature because I've seen it in my lab. I've seen the immune response increase. I've seen your DNA repair capacity increase, and I've seen DNA protection, and I know that it works.
Take Dr. Howard's Health Challenge and find out how to get 2 free sets of fruits and veggies. We'll even ship them to you free. Call now for details. Call 1-800-246-8751. That's 1-800-246-8751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Chicago.
Stick around and get your small business unstuck. More of Business Insanity Talk Radio with Barry Maltz. Now on AM 560, The Answer.
I truly believe that entrepreneurship can save the economy of this country. My next guest shares that belief as he started a program 30 years ago to prove it. Steve Mariotti left a successful career in 1982 to become a public high school teacher in New York's roughest neighborhood. He discovered he could reach even the most troubled students by teaching them to run a small business. In 1987, he founded the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship, known as NIFTY, to bring entrepreneurship education to low-income youth. NIFTY has worked with over 600,000 young people from low-income communities and has programs in 17 U.S. communities and 10 countries. He's the author of the book called An Entrepreneur's Manifesto. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Barry. I'm really glad to be back.
So I got to ask the first question. Why the heck would you leave a great career to become a public school teacher?
That's a good question. But, you know, in 1981, 36 years ago, I got mugged in New York City on FDR Drive in the park there in broad daylight in front of my girlfriend. And it was really, really traumatic experience. I went to a specialist in psychology and with post-traumatic stress disorder. And he said the best way to get over it is to flood it, which means you go in and you teach the kids, the type of children that had mugged you. And thank God I did that. I got totally over post-traumatic stress disorder, and I've had the most wonderful career a person could have. I love teaching, and I love talking about entrepreneurship, and I love teaching low-income kids how to start businesses.
But what made you think, Steve, so long ago, and this, we have to remember, this was before entrepreneurship was popular in our culture, before it was a nice buzzword, it was looked up to. What made you think that these particular kids could really learn how to run small businesses and it would actually help them?
It happened by accident. It was March 6, 1982. I'd been teaching for 6 months. It had been a disaster. I was in Bedford-Stuyvesant in a very difficult class, and there were 56 kids in the class. There's only supposed to be 34. And I was teaching the traditional lessons, which were, weren't working. And I stepped out of the classroom. Happened to be a very spiritual person, and I literally prayed for help. And I walked back into the class. I remember exactly the time. It was life-changing for me, so I held it in my mind, took off my watch, held it up, and I said, "How much would you pay for this watch?" And that began it. The class immediately went stone-cold silent. You would have thought it was a Rhodes Scholarship class at Oxford, and we had a half an hour debate on what the watch was worth. The next day, I started to talk about wholesalers, the next day about sales, and 37 years later, this idea that street smarts can become business smarts has allowed NIFTY, the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship that I founded in 87 after 8 years of teaching, to spread all over the world. And I appreciate you knowing that and mentioning it to your listeners, Barry. Thank you.
And so you talked about turning street smarts into business smarts. Why are at youth risk? Why do they have an aptitude for entrepreneurship?
I think primarily because they don't learn hierarchies. So they come at society where they can sell or market to anyone. They can walk up to the general, so to speak, and not be intimidated. And that's a gift, and that's one of the hallmarks of all the great entrepreneurs. In this incredible movie, The Founder, that just came out, I urge everybody on your that's listening to the show to see that movie. It's the story of Ray Kroc and the building of McDonald's. He had that gift. He was not intimidated by anyone. And that's the advantage that we have in a lot of low-income communities, not only in America, but around the world. They don't learn the hierarchies of life, the Harvard, the Princeton, the Yale type things, and that this person's really rich, so you can't talk to them. They don't look at life that way. And boy, is that an advantage in the market.
We're talking with Steve Mariotti. He's the author of a book called An Entrepreneur's Manifesto and founder of the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship, NIFTY. One of the things that I really like is that when these kind of kids can start their own businesses, I believe they feel less helpless. They really can take control of their own destiny. Has that how it's worked out?
Absolutely. It's called locus of control in the literature, a technical literature. But I recommend to anybody who's listening to your show and who knows somebody who feels sad, disconnected, powerless, has a boss that doesn't like them, is in a career path or a job that they can't stand, to try and start a business, even if it's part-time, even if you're selling one product an hour a day. I always say one sales call a day, 6 days a week, will change your psyche. And what it can do for people as far as them becoming more confident, developing grit and becoming tenacious, and lifting this a depression, which sometimes all of us get at times, but you're being proactive, you're taking control of your time and your space, and also the vision of being able to help other people, which is what the entrepreneur is doing, and also the vision that you can help a lot of people and make a lot of money is just a beautiful motivator, and I think should be taught to every child in the world every year.
Steve, what kind of businesses actually do these youth actually start? Because we know that the average small business owner, the average entrepreneur, has a lot of difficulty getting access to capital, and I believe that these youth in tough neighborhood even have less access to capital. So what do they typically start?
It's a huge issue. The way I try to approach it from a positive viewpoint is that money, liquidity, is only one form of capital. You have your reputation. Most important, you have your knowledge of your neighborhood, and you have networks, friendships, and there always will be somebody that if you come up with a niche, an idea that can help the neighborhood, and you can supply profitably, even if it's something as simple as bringing in a new type of food or a lower cost hot dog or buying at wholesale a jewelry item that hasn't been worn very much in your neighborhood, there will be somebody in that neighborhood that will help you financially. That's just how markets are. And even in the poorest neighborhoods, and I've been into all the major poor neighborhoods in Europe and Asia and America, the world famous ones. And I would always ask to see the successful entrepreneurs. And people would look at me and go, well, there aren't any. And I would say, no, that's not true. Sure enough, I go to, and I'm using this just as an example, it's my hometown, actually, Flint, Michigan, and I asked to meet the top young entrepreneurs, and there would be 60 of them, and they would own a successful business that nobody'd heard about. They'd employ 9 people, 11 people, and they'd always be looking for people with ideas that they could help with small amounts of capital and advice. Entrepreneurs are the most giving community everywhere in the world. If you want to get something done or if you need help, find the local entrepreneurs, go to their club, go meet them individually, and they love to help people.
I think that's very true. Steve, well, with the 30 seconds we have left, can you give us an example that really stands out in your mind of someone that your organization has helped that really has gone on to some great success for themselves?
First of all, I always define success from the individual. If the individual child tells me, Mr. Mariotti, I'm meeting my goals,
right,
I'm happy, then they're successful. But the success that mattered a lot to me was this young man named Malik Armstead, 79 Myrtle Avenue is his business in Brooklyn. And 18 years ago, he told me, came to me, he said, I'm going to start a restaurant at 79 Myrtle Avenue. So I went out there on a weekend in Brooklyn, New York. I lived in Manhattan at the time, and I felt the neighborhood was too intense at that time to start a business. And he looked at me and he said, remember what you said about following your dreams? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I'm following my dreams.
Steve, I got to leave it there because we're out of time. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Barry. I had a great time. Great.
Go online. You can learn more about Malik. Coming up, how Amazon can help the small business owner sell their products online. AM 560, the answer, right back.
You need to understand that the way you build wealth is you do not use the evening news or CNN or Fox to set the tone of your emotions around your investing.
The Dave Ramsey Show.
If you're thinking of changing your investing patterns because you're watching the news, you need to turn off the news. You are in charge of your destiny.
Dave Ramsey. Weeknights starting at 7. Presented by Wintrust Community Bank on AM 560. The Answer.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carmen Roberts. Parts of East Texas are a twisted mess. Five tornadoes slammed through several towns east of Dallas yesterday, killing five and injuring nearly 50, and casualties may go higher.
We got special units, task forces from around the state that are going to be coming in and going through these areas. We still may have some people that aren't accounted for.
Canton Fire Department Captain Brian Horton, one tornado cut a 40-mile-long destructive path. President Trump skipped last night's White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, a point not lost on comic Hasan Minhaj.
The leader of our country is not here. And that's because he lives in Moscow. It is a very long flight. It'd be hard for Vlad to make it. Vlad can't just make it on a Saturday. It's a Saturday.
Minhaj from Comedy Central's The Daily Show. President Trump has attacked the press, calling it fake news. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer. From the Alarm Detection Systems Traffic Center.
Good morning, I'm Jeremy Scott. Taking a look at your roads. A lot of crashes out there. We'll start things off on the Tri-State Northbound where the three right lanes are closed with an accident at 127th. Southbound 55 just before 53. We have heard that this crash is in the pickup stages, but still two right lanes are shut down as a result. 8094 westbound of Broadway, the two left lanes are closed with a crash. Also inbound on the Stevenson, cars hit the wall on the ramp from the inbound Stevenson to the inbound Dan Ryan. This report is sponsored by Ace. Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks. It's also the place with national brands like Scott's, Miracle-Gro, Ortho, and Roundup, and the local expertise you need to grow the lawn and garden you've always wanted. Stop by Ace today to stock up on everything you need for the season. Forecast for today, wet weather returns with temperatures in the 50s. Right now, it'll hear 42, 44 Midway, and 43 at the lakefront. Your next update's in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
Growth is key to the success of small business owners, but a lot of companies fail to reach their potential because they can't find enough customers. Maybe because it's competition or not knowing where to find new customers, or maybe it's not having a big enough marketing or sales budget. But there is a new opportunity on the horizon that every small business can now take advantage of. Simply put, it's the 500 million consumers in China who love to buy online, especially authentic products made in America. They represent an unprecedented opportunity for every American small business to act now. But to make China work for you, there's only one partner you ever need. That's Alibaba, the Chinese version of Amazon and Google, where you can buy and sell anything with hundreds of millions of consumers and suppliers all there waiting for you. Alibaba has done the hard work creating the marketplace. If you want access to this incredible marketplace, you need to learn a lot, but fast. Sure, you can hire a consultant for hundreds of thousands of dollars, or you can watch thousands of YouTube videos and hope you can learn not to make a really big mistake. Or instead, you can attend a two-day Alibaba event in Detroit on June 20th to 21st called Gateway 17. Here you can meet experts, form new business relationships, and learn from companies already in China. In just 2 days, you can know everything you need to know to start growing fast. Gateway 17 has limited availability and expects to sell out fast. And because I know this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for my listeners, I've talked them into an amazing offer. While event passes are still available, save 50% off the registration fee. This is a great growth opportunity for current businesses as well as entrepreneurs. But you can only get this great deal if you go to gateway17.com and enter my code BITALK when you register. This is the only way to get this great offer. Go to gateway17.com. That's GATEWAY17.com and enter BITALK when you register. I look forward to seeing you there.
Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies.
It works for me. I need it in the afternoon. I wear down. I'm 84. And in the afternoon, I sort of slow down. I take my Balance of Nature, and it picks me right up.
Knowing that I'm getting my fruits and vegetables, I feel better.
I have a blood disease, but I've been taking this, and I really don't bleed as much as I used to either. That in itself, to me, is a miracle. I will continue my Balance of Nature. The best thing that Dr. Howard ever did was make these pills.
Take Dr. Howard's health challenge and find out how to get the best offer they've ever given. Two free sets of fruits and veggies. We'll even ship them to you free. Call now for details. Call 1-800-2468-751. That's 1-800-2468-751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Chicago.
Now, back to Business Insanity Talk Radio. It's time to get your small business unstuck on AM 560, The Answer. Once again, here's Barry Maltz.
Well, once again, it is confession time on Business Insanity Talk Radio. I am an Amazon addict. I have placed 76 orders in the last 6 months. But what a lot of small business owners don't know is that Amazon is an excellent place for them to sell their products. More and more small businesses are using Amazon as a place to get customers and distribute their products. My next guest has done just that. Kristen Ray is a small business owner, designer, and entrepreneur. She sells several brands exclusively through Amazon. Over the last few years, she's been able to keep her operations small by outsourcing key operations to Amazon, which gives her an opportunity to grow her business. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Barry. Thanks for having me.
So a lot of people look at Amazon just as a place where people can buy commodities or large corporations can sell their wares. But really, it has been good for a small business like yours, right? How'd you get started and why'd you think to sell through Amazon?
Well, you know, I first started, you know, wanting to sell to those businesses. But really, you know, it's too small of a brand. You know, places like Macy's, you know, they weren't interested in buying from somebody like me. And so it really kind of brought me to Amazon Marketplace specifically because you can be, you know, a third-party seller and, you know, just start your listings and kind of go, you know, without a lot of barriers to entry.
And so tell us a little about your product and the type of success that you've actually had.
Yeah, so like you even mentioned, I have several brands. I started out selling luggage. You know, an idea just kind of came to mind and I, you know, brought this product to life and brought it to market. You know, with the data that Amazon provides, I was able to, you know, expand into new categories. So right now I'm selling an apparel type item at the Robe, you know, and kind of using the sales data that I have been able to acquire over some time.
So does Amazon just fulfill your product or does it, and you have to drive traffic to it, or does it actually bring you new customers?
You know, I would say that it brings me customers. You know, I had been on several other, you know, third-party marketplaces before I really came to Amazon and became an Amazon exclusive seller, and they didn't nearly have the traffic. So, you know, your Overstocks, Wayfairs, even Groupon, you know, located there in Chicago, you have an easier time as, you know, a smaller brand getting to those places, but, you know, they just don't have the traffic and they just didn't have the return on investment for the time spent.
And Kristen, I think this is a really important point because a lot of small business owners think, well, I've got this great idea. If I build it, they will come. And they really have a hard time getting out in front of customers. And Amazon has so many people coming to their sites every single day
exactly.
That it's easier to get in front of customers, right?
There's just a larger number of customers. You know, I mean, consumer product buying has kind of consolidated into Amazon and maybe several other places that people shop. But, you know, as a brand specifically retailing through Amazon, I just find it really beneficial, especially being able to use FBA. You know, I'm a solopreneur. It's just me. I do the whole supply chain, but it's really great to be able to count on Amazon and the professionals that work at FBA to handle your product and, you know, send it to your customers and get it there on time. And, you know, really Prime is where it's at, you know, so it gives you that opportunity to, you know, then connect with more people who are constantly buying. Like you had mentioned, you know, you purchase a lot through Amazon, you know, where are those brands you're buying from in the marketplace? And so, you know, as a small brand owner, you're just really appreciative of that opportunity to be next to those big brands.
So, Kristen, take us through some logistics of how this actually works and I guess how easy it is. You mentioned FBA, which is fulfillment by Amazon. What's the process you actually have to go through?
So, you know, I design, source, and import my products. So when they get here, You know, I market with the correct labels and the packaging that Amazon needs it to go in. I go into Seller Central, and there's an interface in there that, you know, from the box level, you can tell Amazon what they're getting and the quantities that they're getting. And really, you know, just kind of fill out all of that information. They tell you where it needs to, you know, be sent to. You can print your labels, you know, directly from that online interface. And, you know, I can call for a UPS pickup, you know, that comes to my home or a business address, you know, pretty easily. So, you know, as long as you get that process down, you know, that's kind of it, you know. So fulfilling, you know, your orders and, you know, taking care of your customers is really where, you know, the rest of your responsibility then lies.
So it had to be really a wonderful surprise the first time you started getting orders through Amazon, right? Almost magical.
It was great. You know, I mean, you get a notification email and it's so exciting. And, you know, a lot of the customers and nearly almost every customer gets a little, you know, signed thank you, you know, inside from me, because I'm appreciative of all of that kind of goes into it. So when you feel like, you know, you got this order from this address, you know, it was kind of meant to be, and you're just, you know, if they start coming in more frequency, you know, it's a very good feeling. You're doing something right.
And so the point that I really want to make is that Amazon really can be a place for small business owners. Kristen, tell us about the economics. How does this really work?
Well, you know, I mean, for me and just being a small business owner, like I said, there's a return on investment. You know, your time that you kind of spend in doing any of the business things that you need to do. So with Amazon, it's just very centralized. You know, your market is there, and they make it easy for you to administrate, you know, several parts of your business and contract out, you know, for everything else. And so it just really works as a small business owner who, you know, takes a certain amount of time every week for this part of business, and then I can diversify and have another small business that does something else. And so I think you're finding a lot of people that are really getting into, you know, having a product on Amazon and maybe having several other, you know, side hustles that are also their business.
Right. Well, Kristen, thanks so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Barry.
Coming up, how to build a brand that gets through all the digital clutter. This is AM 560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the Alarm Detection Systems Traffic Center.
Good morning, I'm Jeremy Scott, taking a look at your roadways, watching several crashes out there. We'll start things off northbound on the tri-state, where the three right lanes are blocked at 127th with crash investigation and cleanup. Also 55 southbound before Route 53, crash should be picked up by now, but it was in the two right lanes, could still be there by the time you get down there. Also on the Stevenson inbound, a car's hit the wall on the ramp from the inbound Stevenson to the inbound Dan Ryan. And 8094 westbound at Broadway, the two left lanes are closed with a crash. Other than that, really not looking too bad as you are heading out and about today. We're seeing no major accidents or delays as you are traveling around the area. Do keep in mind, again, about the slick conditions. It will cause a big problem. And it's only going to get worse as the rain moves in later today with temperatures in the 50s. 42 O'Hare, 44 Midway. Next updates in 15 minutes on AM 560 The Answer.
In my world of 25 years of marriage, getting my wife flowers is always a great idea. It's even a better idea to get my mother flowers on Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. But I always had problems saying the right gift, and believe me, I don't want to send anybody crap. You see, the company would almost never send what I asked. It seems like they were always running out of roses and substituted carnations instead. They would send old flowers that were picked weeks ago, so they would never open. Well, I finally found a new flower company called Bloom that doesn't cut these corners. The flowers, they actually are picked right before you order, so they last a lot longer. They're arranged by a designer, so they're Facebook and Instagram ready. And for small business owners, it's super convenient. It takes less than 2 minutes to order. And wait till you see these flowers. There's this wow moment. It's a huge bouquet. You can tell it's handmade. A ton of flowers at the price. The burlap wrap truly adds a premium touch, and it's really different from that cheap cellophane crap the other guys use. And then this filler isn't cheap like the stuff like they call baby's breath, which in my opinion is just weeds, but beautiful and expensive like eucalyptus. The vase, truly a premium touch. Your mom's going to use it for years and be reminded of your thoughtful gift. And now here's the best part. I have an exclusive offer to my listeners for this week only. Bloom That will include at no charge a premium designer vase that costs everyone else $15, plus handmade caramel treats, normally $10, but free to my listeners. That's a huge savings of $25. And here's how to take advantage of this amazing offer. Go to bloomthat.com/insanity. That's bloomthat.com/insanity and find the perfect handcrafted designer flowers. You'll automatically get the premium designer vase and caramel treats, a $25 value. Again, it's bloomthat.com/insanity for premium designer bouquet, free vases, and treats. Don't make your mother lie about the flowers she gets. Can't wait to see them on Facebook.
Stick around and get your small business unstuck. More of Business Insanity Talk Radio with Barry Maltz. Now on AM 560, The Answer.
Well, how do you create a brand that stands out from the rest of today's crowded digital landscape? My next guest knows how to do that. Craig Kleeman is one of the world's greatest cold callers and is a world-leading expert on the sales process, sales transformation, and professional motivation. He developed the Must React system from which certified and trained sellers completed 1 million outreaches, scheduled 252,000 meetings, and generated more than $400 million in net revenue. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, Barry. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, that's an amazing, amazing result. Tell us about a little bit about the system before we get to your new book.
You bet. You know, it's really centered on the premise, Barry, of leading with fact-based research. And we're calling, especially on C-suite executives, buyers no longer think in terms of product benefit or value proposition language, but rather they think in terms of what I call the four pillars of executive buyer thought, which is topics, trends, metrics, and outcomes. And when you learn to lead with fact-based research that is relevant to their professional and personal mandates, that's topically correct, that's supported by trends, metrics, and outcomes, it's a big, big, big hook. And there's a whole lot I could talk about it, but that's one of the key innovative components to the methodology that's gotten some of those results that you just described.
So, Craig, in other words, a salesperson's really got to do their homework. They just can't go in there and say, hey, you want to buy from me?
Well, you know, they have to do their homework, but generally they do it in rather generic format. For example, one group we worked with was selling a surgical information system to chief medical officers, and they were coming in with classic value proposition language like, hey, I want to talk to you about this enterprise software system and how we saved, you know, Northwestern Memorial $1 million last year or something like that. But when they learned the power of this, the call and said, I'm calling to schedule your 15-minute perioperative analytical review. Well, what chief marketing officer is going to say no to
right,
that?
Right.
So the key is just find the right terms and gets back to language and persuasion, Barry, you
right.
know.
So you have a new book out. It's called The Winning Brand. Tell us about why you got involved in this area since it's such a crowded digital landscape.
Yes, it is. But, you know, I had gone through a personal journey on my own of building a personal brand, and it wasn't all exactly by design. It started out as kind of a big accident. But I went from kind of, you know, zero social media involvement in a very short period of time to several hundred thousand, you know, followers in the social media land. And I just kind of went back and saw how it happened, and then I went from it being accidental to now being deliberate, and then I started working on a cadence and a whole sort of pathway to it. So in the book, I just went back and documented my journey, and I created it as kind of a how-to book based upon principles and steps. So anyone who reads the book can follow, really, it's like a cookbook, really, a recipe, can follow the principles, you know, the key five or six principles, and then walk right through the simple steps. And anyone can craft their image, build a global influence, and really make great strides in their career. So that's really why I wrote the book, Barry.
So what's really the key for small business owners really to create a winning brand? Because a lot of them don't focus in on that.
You know, that's a good question. There's a whole lot of things I could talk about. I'll point to a couple of things. When I went to firstnamelastname.com, CraigKleeman.com, that was very significant. Secondly, just, you know, creating an attitude of being bold and taking inventory about your own brand mix, discovering some originality. You know, Barry, anybody, can go on social media and regurgitate other people's material. But when you create some original material that is unique and maybe even goes against the grain of conventional wisdom but is sensible, That has a whole lot to do with it. So I think, you know, creating, understanding the right principles about having the right attitude, being bold, taking inventory, and then doing the right things. FirstNameLastName.com, creating original content, developing a story, taking your brand digital. It can just produce amazing results.
But, Craig, a lot of people are afraid to do that because they feel if they step out, they'll get stepped on. What should a small business owner do?
Hey, you know what? I'm glad you asked that question because my clients started affectionately calling me, almost jokingly, the world's greatest cold caller. And when I began to rebuild and rebrand my digital assets, I have to tell you, I was a little bit afraid. I was a little bit afraid it was too bold. I was a little bit afraid
right. People
would judge me. People probably did judge me.
Right.
But, you know, there, when I threw that moniker on there, the goodness way outweighed, you know, those other concerns.
And so you think it's okay for people to be bold. And what do they do if people step out and initially maybe they can't live up to that billing? I mean, do they fake it till they make it?
You know, I am not sure I quite know the answer to that question. And there probably is. Some people are very good at faking it till they're making it. Others might fall on their feet. I think it's a matter of being true to who you are and what you've done to some degree. In other words, just because my client started calling me the world's greatest cold caller doesn't mean I am. But I guess since I threw it out there in the digital world, I've applied for that job, Barry. So
right.
I can't give you a definitive answer on that, but that's my commentary.
Yeah, and I think it's important to have some kind of brand. Like they now call me the unstuck guy, right, to get small business unstuck. And you want one thing in their mind for them to remember. So the title of the book is called A Winning Brand. Craig, where can you get a copy of the book, and where can people get in touch with you?
Just go to Amazon. I'm happy to say it's the number one bestseller in a whole bunch of categories, but Amazon.com and search A Winning Brand or my name, Craig Kleeman, both with K's, and people can get the book that way.
Craig, thanks so much for being on the show.
Barry, it's a pleasure. Hope to see you sometime soon. Bye.
Hope
for
so
now.
Too. Coming up, a lot of small business owners make bad decisions around money. This is typically because they lack financial skills and financial data, but my guest coming up thinks it's actually human nature that gets in the way. This is AM560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before for just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications. Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
Balance of Nature's Fruits and Veggies.
I love the product. I think I've been feeling great.
Just feel so energetic. Just amazing.
My cholesterol readings have never been better.
Balance of Nature has been consistent and has changed my life.
I love the product. It's really helped me.
I don't need my cane anymore. My knee doesn't hurt. I was afraid every day to wake up for fear it's going to hurt, but it hasn't hurt since.
Since I'm taking this stuff, it really is absolutely great. I mean, I'm digesting better. I have better appetite. You know, it's just worked miracles.
Take Dr. Howard's health challenge and find out how to get two free sets of fruits and veggies. We'll even ship them to you free. Call now for details. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go online to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Chicago.
You have a wonderful company. I love my Balance of Nature. My whole life is so much better.
Now, back to Business Insanity Talk Radio. It's time to get your small business unstuck on AM 560, The Answer. Once again, here's Barry Moltz.
Well, a lot of small business owners make bad decisions around money. This is typically a lack of financial skills and financial data. But my next guest believes that human nature is actually the thing that gets in the way of most good financial decisions. John Howe is a PhD in CFA. He's also chair of the Department of Finance, University of Missouri, where he has taught finance more than two decades and has received awards for excellence. He's got a new book out called The Foolish Corner. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
So why does human nature get in the way of good financial decisions?
Well, the short answer is the result of human evolution and what's worked in the past for us in terms of surviving as a species.
And so what does that mean? Are we kind of doomed from the start?
Well, it does mean that we have to work actively against these kind of entrained instincts that we have, these evolutionary instincts. So, yeah, we do have to take action to do that, but we're not doomed, no.
So what are these instincts that work against making good financial decisions?
Well, there's several of them. One of them has to do with overconfidence, and I have a chapter in the book that talks about optimism versus overconfidence, and small business owners definitely need to be optimistic, but a danger that they could fall into, a trap they could fall into, is being overconfident, that is, overestimating their own abilities.
So is this one of the bias that we go into it, that we expect things to work out, so it really affects our decision?
Yes. Well, there are two things that affect what we expect. One is the optimism, which has to do with the external events, like the public's going to receive my product well or my business model well. And that has to do with external things. And overconfidence has to do with kind of your ability about your internal skills. And both optimism is definitely necessary for a small business owner. It's the overconfidence that I would caution you against.
So you're right. You really need confidence and you really need optimism. So how do you balance these things out? Because you don't want to go in with doom and gloom and still make good financial decisions.
That's a good question, and one of the techniques I propose in the book is the use of a devil's advocate, where you have someone just kind of as a sounding board test your ideas against them.
And so is this like a mentor or something like that?
Well, it could be a peer or it could be a mentor. It's just someone who is going to ask you to question your assumptions and maybe make you think a little bit about what would happen if those assumptions aren't borne out.
And so in your research, what else have you found that really helps make good financial decisions?
Well, I think another thing that's important, I think, is framing. And framing basically is how you think about yourself against what peer group do you think yourself. So in the case of a small business owner, for example, if you think, well, I'm not Snapchat or something. I'm not one of these big tech things that's gone really well. It's very easy to get discouraged because these are very, very successful, although they're very rare kinds of businesses. But if you could reframe it and say, well, am I making a living? Am I doing something I'm enjoying? Am I helping the world? Then you can feel much better about it. So you frame the question differently. That is by choosing to whom you compare yourself.
John, I think it's some good advice. The book is called The Foolish Corner. How can people get in touch with you?
I'm on the website at the University of Missouri College of Business, and The Foolish Corner is available on Amazon. And those are probably the two best ways to get a hold of me.
John, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, Barry.
I want to thank everyone for joining us this week. Of course, I want to thank our sponsors, Nextiva, Alibaba, and BloomMat. I also want to thank our staff, especially our booking producer, Sarah Schaffrin, our in-studio producer, Debbie Schreiner, and our marketing manager, Courtney Dury. If you're serious about being more successful this year, you got to give me a call on my private line, 773-837-8250, or you can email me at barry@moltz.com. Isn't this the year that you finally get your small business unstuck? Isn't this the year that you finally make the money you deserve? Remember, love everyone. Trust a few and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry on the web at barrymoltz.com. You've been listening to Business Insanity Talk Radio.
GEICO presents a